It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Fresh off a fun night out with the fellas last night at the Wizards game. We'll talk about that in a moment to get started here. Just a little fun on a Friday, but then we got a potpourri of news to get to and potpourri of things to get to. Of course, tonight, the biggest story here on the station here in the DMV is the potential for NHL history. Alex Ovechkin on the verge of breaking Wayne Gretzky's goal record. He is merely a hat trick away, which is a bit of a silly way to phrase it. Like, what are the chances he gets a hat trick tonight? But also, what are the chances he's done any of this? So certainly could see history tonight. If not, potentially it's in New York over the weekend. And if not, they are back home next week. Certainly would be awesome if it happened at home. But Ovechkin scored each of the last couple of games. He is on fire right now, and the Caps continue to roll towards the one seed in the Eastern Conference. So we'll talk about that with Steve Wino coming up at 5 o'clock, the AP's national hockey writer. We will also, on the show today, have our good friend Clint Yates. And we will give you a little bit more of our chat with Jeremy Green from Take Command on Commanders NFL draft things, because Jeremy was so well received, one of the best guests we've ever had, one of the favorite guests that folks have told us, got more feedback on this episode than I have on anything. I mean, we'll have some of the biggest names in draft world. We'll have Dane Brugler next Thursday. We are working on getting Field Yates on, and we've had those guys. We've had Charles Davis. We've had all these guys, and then you guys are like, this dude is who we want to talk ball with. So we're going to give you a little bit more of that episode in case you haven't had a chance to hear the full thing. And if you're like, well, shoot, I'll take the sampler platter, and then maybe I'll check out the whole thing. Sweet. Jeremy Green with us a little bit later in the show as well. But last night, it was a fun night. Got to go out to the Wizards game. Thanks to the Wizards for hosting us and 106.7 The Fan. And It was fun to just be out there and hang out with I spent a lot of time with Darius over from 106.7 The Fan, one of the producers of Grant and Danny, and my guy Toby Altizer, and we actually had a really fun conversation where I'm very curious, and this is flat out stealing a topic, because apparently we're having this conversation and I just go, this is an incredible radio topic, and Grant, who's the one who started it, it was like, yeah, we did it last offseason. But if you had 5 championships to spread out over the rest of your life, how would you distribute them amongst DC sports? Like, would you give the Commanders 5 Lombardis? Would you say we got you know, one Stanley Cup, two Lombardis, one, and we're talking just purely Caps, Wizards, Nats, Caps, Wizards, Nats, Commanders, right? Because once you start adding another sports, you're going to need a lot more, lot more trophies. Like, I turned to Toby at one point and was like, look, we all know my favorite DC sports team's already got one recently. The Spirit won it in 2021. Obviously, the Mystics won it in 2019. So, not being exclusive for any other reason, you know, if you're a huge DC United fan or whatever other teams you want to talk about in town. But if you go with the traditional Big Four, just for the sake of argument and to make that five be able to stretch a little bit more, as opposed to getting real thin by giving one to everyone. I mean, all due respect to Mark Einz, Washington Castles. But they can have their own bucket of trophies. We're not going to limit you. Win every year. Do it. But how would you distribute those five? And it was interesting hearing everyone's responses. And it started with us trying to guess what Grant's would be. But I came down on it. I would love to see Ovi get one more because his career. Like one thing I love about the NBA is it feels typically by the end of it like most guys wind up with the right number of rings. Like if Steph or LeBron gets one more and they wind up with four or five, that feels right for their career. Both are sitting on four right now. Frankly, LeBron, it feels like he should have more, but his greatness is I think understood in other ways. You know, Jordan's obviously got the six, and we're talking the best players. Like I think Durant is a level like. KD's an all-time great, but is he on the same level as Curry and LeBron? I don't think so, and thus him having two feels more right to me. And there's a litany of guys. Certainly there's guys that were in the Jordan era that should have maybe gotten one. But when you look at the truly all-time greats, it feels about right at the end. Alex Ovechkin having one Stanley Cup doesn't feel right. Like he should be a guy that has multiple rings. His greatness is that level. And the fact that they haven't, like, it's obviously amazing that they won it in 2018, not trying to take away from that accomplishment, nor am I trying to take away from Alex Ovechkin's greatness, certainly on the verge of him reminding us just how special he is in a way that none of us thought was possible, breaking one of the hallowed Gretzky records. But I do feel like getting him one more feels much more correct for the end of his career. So I would love to say one, and it's got to be one of the next 2 years while Ovechkin's still playing for the Caps. I would also want one for the Wizards, which, you know, it was funny talking to some of the other guys, and they're like, Wizards, whatever. But the more I talked, the more I made my case, the more they agree with me. D.C.'s such a special basketball town that when the Wizards are good, which has not happened basically since 2016, when they're good, like the town's on fire for them. And if they were ever really good, I would love to know what that looks like because we've never had that. You know, Grant was telling me, this is before I moved to town, like how electric, and obviously he was a lot younger then too, but how electric the Gilbert years were. But even then, like they weren't any better than the Beal Wall peak of the early 2010s. It's culminating, mid 2010s, culminating in 2016 in that series with the Celtics where John hits the shot, stands on the scorer's table, the whole deal, and then they get Kelly Olynyk in game seven. So I would love to see what happens if the Wizards are truly competitive and what that building feels like and what the town feels like around it. And then, of course, both because it's the biggest show in town and selfishly it's where my proverbial bread is buttered. I'll give everything else to the Commanders. Sorry, Nats, on the Craig Hoffman list. You got your championship. It was amazing. I'm rooting for you. I would give the rest to the Commanders. But I would love to see Ovi get one. That was my list on that. When we get back, Anthony and I can talk about his list, and then we'll get to the rest of the night that we had there at Capital One Arena. Just some fun to start the show today. A little sports talk, harmless fun on a Friday. Who could have thought? And then we will get deeper into some of the other stuff that we got going on, including Clinton Yates at 4:30. I believe is when Clinton is going to join us today. Then we also got Steve Wino definitely coming up at 5 o'clock. On Alex Ovechkin's pursuit of Gretzky's record. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, and we're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We have a camera two for Anthony Haney. People are like, whoa, that's what he looks like straight on.
I mean, it's going to take some adjusting, some getting used to, but...
Don't worry. It's only when I'm in my home studio
yes.
that you are going to... Or we're going to move the camera back to where it was.
Possibly. Yes. We're going to figure that out, too.
Yeah. So we'll get that all straightened away. But, Anthony, who were you? I didn't see you most of the night last night.
Yeah, I was eating. I was talking to B. Mitch and Jeff. Jeff was back there challenging me to, you know, everything under the sun.
Of course. He can't help himself.
So, yeah, that's where I was. There was a lot of competitive spiritness in my area.
I guess the question of why Jeff is one that our audience probably doesn't care that much about.
Yeah.
But also it's one that we can't possibly answer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's Twitter is what? Jeff Too Funny?
Jeff is too funny, yes.
He is too funny. He could stand to be a little less funny. So did the conversation that we were having up front make its way back to you at all with the five championships thing? Because that was actually a really fun, like, hypothetical.
Yeah, Rooster had actually ended up asking me the question. And I'm not going to lie, Craig, I said three Lombardis still because football rules – you know, everything. One NBA championship. And then I think I settled in on the Nationals having the other and the Capitals being without one.
Oh, why did you go that route?
I'm not necessarily sure. I don't know. I've only been to one Capitals game in my life, and there's no shade to, you know, hockey or anything. Because the game that I did go to was a lot of fun.
They're mad fun. I've said this before. I've only got so much brain space. I've only got so much time.
Mm-hmm.
I invest in what I want to invest in, and I'm not here to yuck anyone else's yum.
No.
It was interesting too, because I was talking to, like, I love those types of things where we just get to hang out with like the people that we work with. Mm-hmm. The same way that, like, if you have an offsite or whatever, that you have at any job that anyone driving home from their job on a Friday right now has, where you get to just, like, not talk about work, or get to talk about work in a very different way as opposed to, like, the X's and O's of, hey, what are you doing on the show today? What's, how'd you think about this? What topics do you have off of this? It's just like, where are you from? Which teams did you root for growing up? And it's like almost a reminder to myself sometimes, because I get so focused on the job. Like, sports, when I talk to young people that want to go into this, now I'm going to old man the heck out of this, but whatever. Like, when I talk to young people that want to go into this or that are considering it or even doing it in college, and they ask me about going into the business and becoming the job, I'm like, realize it's going to change your relationship with sports. And I remember actually having a conversation with Ryan Russillo about this when I was young and getting in, and I was fortunate enough to intern at ESPN, so I knew Ryan a little bit back when. And he had talked about this process on the air. Like, Ryan was a huge Red Sox fan, like, dude who lived and died growing up in Boston, 162 games a year with the Red Sox. And he's just like, I don't care anymore. Like, I still do, but I don't care like that. Like, I care now for my job, but I don't live and die with the emotions of every pitch. And some people can keep that. Like, some of the people that we work with are still enormous, enormous fans of their teams. I think I'm not that way for multiple reasons. I think I internalized, like, what Ryan said is someone, he was someone that I really appreciated the way he did the job. Growing up, listening to his show with Van Pelt, I think I probably internalized that a bit. And I had this conversation with Ryan when I was like 22, and I was like, yeah, you know, that thing you talk about, like, it's already happened to me. And he's like, wait, really? And I'm like, yeah. But the other part of that is the teams I grew up rooting for, I very easily and quickly got geographically removed from. And that was also a big part of it. And some of those teams were, it wasn't like my dad grew up rooting for my favorite football team that I grew up rooting for, because my favorite football team growing up didn't exist when my dad or my mom was a kid. My mom and dad grew up in New York with my mom's dad was a Giants fan, and my dad's family were Jets fans. And then we all moved to South Carolina in 1994, the same year they announced the Carolina Panthers as an expansion team. So I was a literal first-generation Carolina Panthers fan, and thus there wasn't this deep family tie that like was ingrained in the way that people say they bleed burgundy and gold. It was impossible. There was nothing to bleed from. I was the first generation. You know, my team growing up in the NBA started as the Charlotte Hornets, because that was the team that was closest to me growing up in Greenville, South Carolina. And then they got ripped away from me because their owner was a cheapskate and moved to New Orleans when I was 12. And so it was just kind of funny talking about that, talking about the baseball teams that I grew up rooting for, all that kind of stuff, and looking at what I do now, where I'm just like pure football, basketball, and then somehow like kind of soccer and, you know, some of the other sports that I like for fun, and thinking about both that and then how much more I just care as a professional, and letting that influence my decision on how I would distribute my theoretical 5 championships for DC sports the rest of my theoretical life.
Now, I think that makes perfect sense. Like, again, I grew up on football, basketball. Those are the primary sports I played. I mean, I played soccer. I don't think DC United was in that conversation.
No.
And then also I ran track. So, like, baseball, I watched from afar. Hockey, I watched from afar. I knew the basics of, you know, the two sports, but I wasn't, you know, as locked in as, you know, some of the other fans from around the area. And I'm a true Washingtonian. I root for every Washington team. So the DC Castles, the DC Defenders, I'm a fan of everybody. But at the same token, I just don't, you know, spend majority of my time like I do with football, with basketball,
yeah,
and things of that nature.
And the fandom comes from like the emotional investment of time spent. And on these sports, I mean, now, like, I mean, I'll care about the Commanders as long. I mean, even right. Like, so I worked in Dallas and lived in Dallas for 2.5 years. And like, I obviously cared a lot about the Cowboys because my professional day to day life, like, revolved around that team in very similar ways that it did here. But it actually wasn't as intense for me personally, because my name was being made down there, to the extent that I made a name in media, was about the Mavs. Like, I was very, very involved in our coverage, my station's coverage of the Mavs, and we were the Mavs flagship station. And so I was at basically every Mavs home game for like 2 straight years. And like, we, you know, imagine if our station, Anthony, was where Monumental Sports Network's studios are, attached to the arena. Like, that's where we worked. We worked one building over. I barely had to go outside to get inside. And in fact, if I went downstairs in our building and went through the parking garages, I didn't have to go outside, to go into the, into American Airlines Arena down there in Dallas, or American Airlines Center down there in Dallas, if it's still called that. So for the first couple of years that I lived here, I was obviously more invested in the DC sports teams and mostly Washington football, because that was the beat I was on when I moved here. But like, I still very much was following what was going on with the Mavs. And then all the guys that I covered left. If I were to get a job tomorrow working somewhere across the country, I want to follow this team until, Jaden Daniels is not on it anymore. Like, I'm invested emotionally to see what happens with the rest of, his career and what Adam Peters does and Dan Quinn and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it did also lead to kind of a funny conversation last night amongst all of us, because I was like, the correct answer is we're all most invested in our own takes. If we think that the Commanders are going to be good, then like, we five Lombardis for the Commanders because we want to be right. And that's really how sports talk radio gets down. We're all rooting for ourselves.
Truly are. We truly are.
Sad state of affairs. No, we want to see DC win. Always want to see the DC teams win. I hope that was enjoyable for people. Just guys talking ball. That's what we are here on the Hoffman Show. Clint Yates, he's one of our guys. The ESPN commentator and host of Clinton and Friends on ESPN Radio joins us next for a conversation, frankly, that I've been waiting for all week around torpedo bats, but also not just torpedo bats.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry blend and orange hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's Friday. Tonight, could see history, or hear history, I should say, here on the station. Alex Ovechkin going for Wayne Gretzky's goal record. We talked about that a few weeks ago with Clinton Yates, but considering it's Friday, Clinton's with us now to talk about other stuff, unless we're going to detour here.
No, we're not. I'm live in my radio studio, so if you guys are wondering why the background is so bright and sunny, because this is literally the look for when we're in Los Angeles, California, live in Studio 5.
There you go. Clinton and Friends, mornings on ESPN Radio. You can check it out in the ESPN Radio app. All right. What I want to talk about with you, Mr. Baseball, here is these torpedo bats. That's every time I look up this week on your network on ESPN, there's some kind of debate going about it. So it's, I want to do two things. One, I want to talk about kind of this larger picture topic we've been tossing around all week about, like, what do we actually want out of our sports? But before that, like, what's, for lack of a better way to phrase it, your take on the torpedo bats and like how impactful they actually are as the Yankees are slamming home runs and then other teams are ordering them and whatever else is going on with them.
Well, to be clear, there's a couple things. Number one, I've never swung a torpedo bat. So I typically don't like discussing how something is actually going to change the game for what I consider my adaptation to it from having played for a decent amount of time. So there's that. But number two is the thing that people forget all the time when it comes to baseball and technology, which is that not superstition, but pattern is so hugely important for baseball players that a couple of guys, even a dozen guys, even a dozen teams getting a bunch more knocks with one type of bat is not going to overnight overhaul Major League Baseball by any stretch of the imagination. What it might do is get a lot more high school kids swinging it. What it might do is have the travel ball circuit explode with otherwise untalented kids on the whole trying to find something in their bats. But you're not going to tell me that a guy's going to play his whole life with regular barrels, for lack of a better term, get to the big leagues, get a couple hits out of a bat, and all of a sudden his entire philosophy on hitting has changed. There's just not enough data at this point, in my opinion, Craig, for that to be a thing. And number two, I just don't know how well it's going to work if you start trying to find reasons or excuses within your own accountability system as a hitter. If you're jumping from bat to bat, these are the kind of things that don't normally happen. Guys are religious about the lumber that they use, moreover, as far as equipment goes. So, yes, has it changed things in terms of a certain uptick in different things? But we're going to have to see a season at minimum before we can get any real data points, either anecdotally or otherwise, on what this change actually means for big league dugouts and batting rooms.
So I think that's interesting because, like, makes sense that you can have, manipulation. You can come to false conclusions based off not enough data, and we're still very early in the season. But by the same token, it seems like there's a real desire here. It seems like they are working so far, and it's obviously based on science and physics. Like, these weren't designed just to like, let's see what happens. They were designed to move the wood around and like have the effect that they seem to be having. And so I guess the question would be like, how much would you need to see to be convinced that, okay, maybe they can swing it the same way. Nothing really is affected outside of when the contact happens because of the density being moved around in the bat and creating a different quality and quantity of sweet spot, that there is more damage being done with the same swings against the same pitchers by the same batters.
You know, it's a good question. How do you have a control group effectively that lets you know that the data has been different necessarily? And I don't know that I know the answer to that question. I'm not trying to dodge it. And I'm not also trying to be arrogant about it. I'm thinking about this sort of in real time, and I'd have to see somebody who wasn't a very good player, for that matter, to utilize the bat in a way that made them feel like or get to a level that was probably replacement level. Like, to me, the difference between Elly De La Cruz becoming an all-star and Elly De La Cruz becoming an MVP is not going to happen with a torpedo bat. But the difference between, I don't know, Dylan Cruz being a big league hitter or not, if that is as a result of this guy finding a swing with a different tool because he's at a different level of the game, that to me would be more convincing. How it can bring lower hitters up rather than just how it can make better hitters better, if that makes sense. That's to me where saturation in market becomes a much bigger discussion in terms of who's doing it and why than the guys that were already good. Think of it that way in terms of like people say, oh, Barry Bonds was on steroids, this, that, and a third. Bro, you could take steroids. You would not be able to launch 100 homers into McCovey Cove. You know what I'm saying?
And also, like, every pitcher was on steroids, and so was everybody else.
Exactly. And that's a separate matter. But my point is how these things affect each different player is what I am as curious about regarding the overall application as to how this change comes. And that's why ultimately I think it's like, look, yeah, stick them on hands, change wide receiving as a position in the NFL with gloves. It did. Did it turn everybody into Jerry Rice? Absolutely not. But for the lower tier player that probably couldn't do something that another guy could, it added a level to there. I think that's where we're going to see more of this than anything else.
I hear you. I think Clint Yates with us here on the Hoffman Show. I think the other interesting part of this, though, parsing this out, is if I'm a pitcher, because like at the end of the day, I guess if I was a DB, I could be like, well, I guess I can use stick 'em too, right? Yeah. And so like there's an equal advantage for the offense versus the defense. Here, there's been no technology jump for the pitchers. And if something that used to be a routine ground ball or a catchable fly ball is now becoming a laser off the wall or a shot in the gap, I'm probably not psyched about it. And that to me feels like a fundamental change in the game.
I don't disagree with that. And I think the place where change will come for Major League Baseball will not be in that. And it will not necessarily be all of a sudden you can add stick'em. It'll be if pitchers started getting balls rocketed off their faces or
also
third basemen's or whatever. The injury element, I think, is going to be a bigger deterrent to this than the offensive boost element by every measure of accountability in Major League Baseball. And I think that's the way that it should be. There's nothing wrong with adding a little offense to the daggone game. Everybody's talking about how batted balls in play are down and all this other stuff. We've made all these different concessions to try to make the game more offensive. Harder hit balls is not going to hurt anybody until it does. And that's where I'm basically at as far as what that line is. I can live with pitchers being upset. I can live with all of that, you know? But I don't think that if guys really are genuinely more at risk as a result of the piece of equipment, that it's smart to do.
So this brings in the kind of larger question that we've been tackling all week, and I've been thinking about and frankly waiting to have this conversation with you specific to this one, which is if we acknowledge that there is a change, and it seems like you're fine with it, but there's going to be a lot of people that are like, no, the beauty of baseball is it's been played the same way for 100 years, and like we truly can compare the 1960s numbers to now. In ways that we can't in other sports, because the game, the basketball is so fundamentally changed. Football is so fundamentally changed. But the records that Mickey Mantle was setting, like some of those are still standing. And he's still very high on a lot of lists. And that's kind of the beauty of baseball. And now all of a sudden, if we got guys that are going to use this, you know, one of the most significant technological changes, if it turns out to be that, if we're just going to, for the rest of this conversation, we're going to assume these torpedo bats are that, right?
Sure.
So if we move forward with this new piece of technology that boosts offense at a very different level, now all of a sudden we've changed the game. And I think a lot of people don't like that specifically in baseball. And the comparison I made is to like, in Formula One, it's an engineering contest. Like the actual contest is not the race, it's who can engineer the best car. And it kind of gets to this foundational question of like, what do we actually want in our sport, in our sports? And I think that's interesting to kick around specifically in baseball, specifically with this technological advancement.
I'll tell you this. In spring training, what they experimented with regarding the ABS system is so much farther away from what I feel is decency in terms of human interaction in baseball than these torpedo bats are. Torpedo bats are a function of a human brain deciding I can use this piece of wood in a different way. This is so above board to me on a regular level. That is a very different thing than saying I'm taking the human element of the umpire out of the game because I want to look at a computer screen and AI to call balls and strikes. That to me is a far more offensive situation than anything having to do with upgrading the technology as far as bats are concerned. I see what you're saying. What do we want out of the game? Some people love looking at numbers, comparing eras. Hell, Cooperstown just had through, in conjunction with MLB, upgrading the statistics to involve Negro leaguers who should have been there all along because it's based on things that humans were doing, we could not actually compare them. That's a historical project as much as it is anything. But I am a in the now guy, mainly because I guess I understand my own mortality and I want what I'm looking at in front of me to be as fun as possible. And for me, taking humans out of the game is a far bigger threat to the cultural fabric and the essence of what baseball is than allowing people to use some bats that are a little different than we've ever had before by a lot. And so that's kind of the other thing about this to me, Craig, is that there are issues within the way the game is adjudicating itself that the bats do not even get close to rising to in my mind. Like, yeah. I get it, but there's just not the same for me. It doesn't raise cause for me. Now, if MLB decides these are illegal, okay. I mean, like, I don't necessarily love that because then it becomes to feel meddlesome, you know, just for the sake of changing. People don't like change, but I'm not at a point yet where I'm thinking, oh my goodness, they got to get these bats out of here because this is just too goofy and this isn't the game I know. No way. Guys used them last year. You know, people just don't know.
Yeah.
That.
I guess, well, so I would say two things, one specific to the bats and one specific to the umps. We disagree on the robot umps thing.
Yes.
Because I want the rules to be administered as cleanly as possible. And if we can do it better, the umpires aren't the humans I want affecting the game. And I realize that is a stylistic difference.
Sure.
You're willing to accept that.
Sure.
And then we get a dude throwing a fit and we get a, and look, we all love a good manager fit over a bad call, but also good God, can we get rid of some of these bad calls? And if we can do that, like I'm fine with that. I think the other part though is like, what kind, and I don't know what I don't know here, I'm willing to admit that. What kind of slippery slope does this open in terms of baseball becoming an engineering contest? Like, what else could we figure out from a technology and science side that changes the way the game is played? And that is a question that I have that is value judgment free. Right.
So, okay.
And then the question is like, do we want that? And that is where I think each individual fan, commentator, participant, and the league itself has to make that judgment of, do we want the technology that is available to us to help advance the game? Or do we want to be able to look at these piece by piece and eventually go like, actually, that one changes us in a way that we don't want, and we're not going to implement it, even though it's available. And do we want to? And then, do we want to encourage that kind of innovation?
I understand what you're saying theoretically, and in practical application, it does become difficult when you're talking about car racing. But that's also a fundamentally different thing, because the entire tool of the game is something that does not have human levers, like literally. And the other thing about it, too, in sort of a math and ordered pairs way, you're not racing the same course when you're playing baseball. That's just, it's a different parameters in terms of how you do things. So I don't know that maximizing for engineering in a sport like baseball is going to change it as much as anything. Now, from the basketball standpoint, the engineering we've done has been on the human side, as we've discussed.
Well, you could say the same about baseball too, right? Like basketball, we can talk about the geometry of the floor and the threes, but like baseball just undid some engineering because people realized that the shift was so effective that they should use it way more. They were like, actually, no, this is changing the game more than we want. This is now illegal. And I think that was smart and good for the game.
I don't disagree. And I think what I'm saying is, I think baseball has a pretty good hold on what they know the game should look like. One of the interesting things coming out of spring training was that ABS system. Do you know what the actual rate was of success pretty much across the board?
What was it?
50%. AKA, probably don't need to change anything, because people are wrong. And right, and until that changes, it was an experiment that was maybe worth doing. But I think that baseball has figured this out. That's why this game has been around so long, even in all the different forms. You can adapt, you can evolve without overshooting the moon. And I think that this, you know, these bats are not even close to that. Not remotely. I am not afraid of the great bat revolution all of a sudden turning the game I fell in love with as a kid into something I can't recognize, not remotely.
Yeah, totally. And I know, I think the umps thing is so interesting too, because I just feel like if we're watching the game live on ESPN and they've had K-Zone for 25 years at this point, like how are we getting the better instantaneous view than the umpire behind the plate?
Well, that's where the word better is objective. Not objective, excuse me. It is subjective. And one of the reasons why I love college baseball, no K-Zones on the screen, kiddos. Simple as that.
Clint Yates, you can catch him talking about bats and balls and everything else in between or beyond on ESPN Radio. Clinton and Friends is the show. It's on mornings on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Clinton, thank you as always. Have a great weekend, sir.
You're very welcome, sir. Welcome to the studio. Look,
that's everyone watching on YouTube. That's Clinton's studio, everybody.
Goodbye.
I'm in my house.
Goodbye, Clinton. Gregory.
you can go to your house now.
What's up, kiddos? It's your boy Clinton Yates from ESPN. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Tell your mama I said what's up.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Today and every day. Today, a chance real quick before the top of the hour. It's the Legends half hour here on the show, Anthony, because now we're going to talk about one of the best in DC sports ever hanging up her shoes. And then we're going to talk about the guy who just refuses to not only hang up his skates, but to stop scoring goals and is on the verge of history. And then speaking of a bunch of goats, we're going to talk about that Warriors-Lakers game that went down last night at 5:15, where all of a sudden the Warriors look like legitimate bona fide championship material. And how far off are the Lakers from that too? Played them tough down the stretch. But got this in the inbox this morning. Not surprising by any stretch of the imagination. More of a formality at this point, but does close the window on one of the all-time greats, a potential future Hall of Famer, probably a future Hall of Famer. Actually, no, definitely a future Hall of Famer. Elena Deledon has announced her retirement. She's a two-time MVP, of course, champion in 2019 with the Mystics. That is the Mystics' currently one and only championship. She will stay close to the game, as the press release reads, as she's going to serve as a special advisor to Monumental Basketball. Deledon said in a quote, after much thought, conversations with family, and soul searching, I finally come to the decision to walk away from playing basketball. It was amazing to look back on all the special teammates, friends, executives, sponsors, staffs, and most importantly, the incredible fans that have accompanied me on this journey. Thankful does not begin to describe how I am now feeling. The game has given me so much, and I'm excited to be able to continue to compete and partake in the pursuit of winning, albeit in a different role with Monumental Basketball. Elena also made a longer announcement on her social media, And this is the one that hurts to read, Ant, because she flat out says, like, my body told me I was done a couple years ago, and it took until now for my mind to accept that. And I hate athletes, especially all-time great athletes, that don't get to go out on their terms. And Elena didn't go out on her terms. I mean, when we last saw her, she was still a really, really exceptional basketball player. And it's a reminder, frankly, as we talk about like LeBron and Curry, how freaking lucky we are to watch these dudes still do it. Dude, Ovechkin, same thing. Like, it's insane these guys are still playing. And the fact that they're still playing at the absolute elite levels, because it's one thing to, like, even if you get a Carmelo ending, right? Melo could still play at the end, but he wasn't anywhere close to what he was at his absolute peak. He wasn't going to be the best player on a winning team. Like, LeBron is, Steph is, and Elena still was 2 years ago at the age of 33 when she last played. But unfortunately, she just couldn't stay on the floor with the issues that she had with her back. And her body was basically like, look, we'll let you go every once in a while. You still got the skill. You still got the drive. But the body just said no. And so today she ultimately hangs it up at calling it a career and takes this new role on with Monumental Basketball.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part for like any athlete, though, you know, really figuring out when your time is, you know, at the end. And we see it often, you know, in the NBA where, you know, we have pros that at the end of their career, they end up being reserves. They start the ring chase because they know, like, you know, their time is nearing. But at the same token, they aren't the player that, you know, they were when they were in their prime and things of that nature. So it is definitely sad to see Elena retire. I remember being in high school watching her, you know, lead the Delaware Blue Hens to the Sweet 16. And just, you know, following her career from her time with the Sky and then also, you know, leading the Mystics to a championship. So, I mean, definitely one of the best scorers I think the W has ever seen. And it's a little sad that, you know, she retires not being able to, you know, go out on the terms, as you just said.
For sure. Just an incredible player, incredibly unique player. One, for those that don't know her story, the 15-second version college-wise, like, she was a UConn recruit and just didn't like the atmosphere, didn't like the kind of cutthroat nature that was UConn. And I think it's a great story because that kind of stuff gets glorified. And then it's like, oh, if you couldn't cut it, then whatever. But like, she was homesick. She just wanted to be back home closer to Delaware. And she has a sister with special needs who she's very, very, very close with and wanted to make sure that she was there to support her sister. And if you think that just because you didn't cut it for any reason, including being homesick at UConn or an atmosphere like that, you can't be great. Like, look at Elena Deladon. She's a champion. She's an MVP. And I mean, Gino Auriemma now, of course, has nothing but great things to say about her. Just, you know, she was a young kid who wanted to choose a different path, went home, led Delaware, like you said, to unfounded heights, you know, prior to that in program history. Her brother, by the way, went to Middle Tennessee State at the same time I was there, was a tight end, Gene. So shout out to Gene Deladon. Didn't you get a shout out on the show today, but salute to you. Your sister's really good at basketball. And so you get somehow a shout out out of it. But Elena, you know, then comes into the league, plays incredible in Chicago, MVP, wants to be again closer to home, takes her, talents here to DC as close as she can get and lifts this franchise to new heights. Also finishes as the, I think the best free throw percentage in WNBA history, nearly 94%, which is absolutely insane, good especially place. Insane when you think that she is 6'5". So, you know, a stretch big if there ever was one. Super talented, and apparently an unbelievable teammate in person as well. You know, I know Alicia, you know, who's one of my great friends and one of the great pros in the WNBA, really enjoyed being her teammate here in DC. So, salute to you, Elena, and hope you enjoy retirement. And it brings you now having this official brings the peace. She gets to hang out with her big giant dogs, her wife, her family, the whole deal. So salute to Elena Deladon, one of the true GOATs in DC sports history and certainly in WNBA history. And congratulations on your new role with Monumental Basketball, and we'll hopefully see you at ESA sooner rather than later. When we get back, speaking of DC sports greats, there is no one who is more etched on DC sports Mount Rushmore than Alex Ovechkin, and he is putting his final chippings into the rock of NHL history as well, a hat trick away from Wayne Gretzky's all-time goals record. We will talk about it with Stephen Wino next for Not My Beat.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.